Hello and welcome to MedTalks, conversations by medical students for medical students. I'm Deborah, and unfortunately today my partner Joey will not be joining us, but we are lucky enough to have a very special guest in studio, Dr. Barent Leonard, who has so kindly offered to help us tackle the topic of the process of speciality. So Dr. Leonard himself is actually a Tuckies man, and he completed his specialization in anesthesiology at Steve Biko. In his spare time, his hobbies include trail riding, riding his bicycle, and making music. The rest of his time is taken up by his three beautiful children. Doctor, it's so wonderful to have you here today. Thank you so much for being with us. How are you feeling? How are you doing?
I'm cold today.
Yeah, it's quite freezing.
But it's good to be here. It's almost as cold as what Steve Biko Hospital is.
Oh, so we're managing. We're one-upping it.
Yeah, for some reason, our aircons there are not so functional. So whatever the temperature is outside is the temperature that it's inside, just minus the sunshine.
Oh, wow. That's a bit extensive. I can vouch for that as well. I'm generally always freezing in there.
Yeah, thanks for the warning that it's cold in here. I try to dress appropriately warm.
Yeah, well, I hope you're heeding to it. All right, so yeah, just thank you so much for joining us, but I think let's get right to it. So firstly, what inspired you to specialize in anesthesiology? It is a notoriously difficult field.
So I wish that I had an inspiring story of why I did anesthesia.
Great journey.
It was a journey, definitely, but I pretty much just stumbled into the profession. Mm. So I've never had a knowledge of what I want to do, mm-hmm. that one thing. I have many surgical colleagues who tell me when they were 3 years old they wanted to be orthopedic surgeons.
Oh, wow.
So they just knew, but I was never like that. Mm-hmm. But when I finished with my medical studies, then I started to work as an intern, and I quite enjoyed the emergency department work.
Okay.
So I started to imagine perhaps I wanted to be an emergency physician. And I quickly realized that as an emergency physician, one of the more stressful moments is when you have to intubate someone.
Mm.
So I thought to myself, well, I need to learn how to intubate properly.
Yeah.
And I had friends that were working in a nearby hospital, and there you had the opportunity to do a diploma in anesthesia because okay. they're an anesthetic consultant. So I thought, well, maybe I should try get into that hospital in my comm service. That was Rob Ferreira Hospital.
Okay.
And I thought if I can get a diploma done, then I would get lots of intubating experience and I would be a good emergency physician. Subsequently, when I started working then as an anesthetist in anesthetic MO, preparing for my DA, I realized, wow, I actually really enjoy this. As a student, you don't get much exposure to anesthesia. I know that the current anesthetic rotation sometimes is a bit horrible, but I can assure you when we were students, it was about 10 times worse.
Oh, wow.
We had these impossible multiple choice question tests that were set for us. I think the only reason that I passed mine was because the previous year students had collected a sample of about 50% of the questions that get asked.
We still do that.
Yeah, we know. So I was able to get 50% from those by memorizing them.
Managed through.
Yeah, so we didn't get much anesthetic exposure. And standing in theater was usually just boring and cold.
And it hurts your back. We're not used to it yet.
I don't remember a backache, but it's possible. So I really didn't know what anesthesia was about. Okay. But when I started working in anesthesia, I realized two things. The one is that I don't have to look after patients in the ward, which means you're not so reliant on other people to make a success. And the other place is that the theater environment, even though it's cold, it's an organized environment. You can create a little space there for yourself. You have a little world. Once your patient is asleep and you're looking after them, then really doesn't matter what else is happening outside in the world. There's nothing you can do about it. You have to look after your patients. So
it's a bit more of a controlled environment.
It is. You can really create a little world there for yourself where you can provide good quality patient care.
Yeah.
And you're able to not have too many other players that you have to look after and work with.
No, it's definitely, I know personally I'm very drawn to anesthesiology. I think it's my controlling nature. but it's definitely, it's quite a beautiful profession in itself, I must say. So after you've finished ComServe, what advice would you give anyone wanting to pursue becoming a specialist? Like, are there any tips or any tricks to get you into the position that you want?
So it helps if you know where you want to specialize.
Okay.
I had studies at Tuckies, so I knew what the system was like, and I remembered how the anesthetic department functioned. So when I was ready to come back into the system, I knew the first thing you do is you make friends with the secretary.
Oh, okay.
That's very important. The reason you need to make friends with the secretary in the department is because she's the one that coordinates the invites for the interviews.
Oh, okay.
And the secretary always has the ear of the HOD.
Oh, okay.
And I remembered about the morning meetings that we used to have to attend.
Yeah.
So even before I got a position, when I was waiting for a post, I used to slip in the mornings and join the morning meetings and just show the department that I'm
keen,
I'm willing and I want to work hard and I want to learn. I would say the best advice that I can give to anyone post-comm service who wants to specialize is don't specialize immediately.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So your specialization is 4 to 5 years. 4 years if you're doing anesthesia or internal medicine, or 5 years if you're doing a surgical discipline.
Okay.
But if you're coming out of your comm service and you're jumping immediately into a specialization, there is so much to learn in a very short amount of time. It sounds like 4 or 5 years is a long time, but it really is very short and goes by very quickly. So I think that the best thing you can do for your career is get a medical officer position in whatever you want to specialize in and get 2 to 3 years of experience.
Mm. And also, I think that would probably just prepare you. Sometimes you have an idealistic view of what that specialization could be like. So just maybe to have that bit more experience in it.
I think you're right. What you're saying is you think you understand what the specialization is about, but only when you start working do you really get to the nitty-gritty of it.
Mm.
I remember as a comm server, at that stage I wasn't sure, but I rotated 3 months in obs and gynae, and I really enjoyed the surgical side of it.
Mm.
I started to think, well, maybe I should go into surgery, and then I got a needle prick injury and I had to be on ARVs.
And that quickly changed your mind.
Yeah, it was one of the things that got me thinking, well, if you're working with needles the whole day, you probably have a higher risk of needle stick injuries. And also, I didn't enjoy the chaos of a general ward. I felt like I could never control the environment. And too many things slipped through my fingers.
Yeah.
So that was, that was a good experience. But the other thing is, if you've got 2 or 3 years of experience in your field as a medical officer, that's where you're really learning the basics of your speciality. And you don't want to walk into a specialist registrar post and have to learn the basics, how to do the technical work, how to assess a patient, because it really can be overwhelming at that stage.
I can imagine, on top of everything else that you have to learn, you still have to go through your basics. I can imagine that can be.
Because I did my internship. We just had 1 year internship, 1 year comm service.
Oh, okay.
And then I got an MO post in anesthesia. And then I worked for 3.5 years in anesthesia.
Mm.
And then even after 3 years of anesthesia, I still wasn't sure if this was the right thing for me, if I'd learned enough, if I would be able to cope in an academic environment.
Mm.
Because the amount of knowledge that you have to learn, it really is enormous. But I didn't go specialize immediately then. I spent some time working as a GP.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I came back into anesthesia, then those 5 years of medical experience that I had picked up, I found were really, really useful, because there was so much basic knowledge that I already knew from managing patients from day to day, that was applicable to anesthesia. For example, I'd managed hypertensive patients or diabetic patients. So the medications weren't new. The symptoms that they presented with weren't new. I had an idea of what complications to expect. And especially in anesthesia, you need to be able to assess the patient preoperatively, get a holistic view of the patient to estimate their risk. And it's so much easier when you've got clinical experience to do that.
No, I definitely hear you on that. And I think it's almost a bit of a relief, because as we were talking earlier, sometimes, as, medical students and young medical doctors, you're very career orientated and you put a lot of pressure on yourself and you will have to meet all these deadlines. So, you want to be a specialist at the youngest age that, you possibly can be. So sometimes it's just nice to kind of just take a break, relax, and just know that, it's okay. You don't have to meet these unattainable expectations that you place on yourself.
Yeah. And if you think about it, if you're a specialist by 30, you're going to be doing that for another 35 years. 35 years is a really long time.
to be doing the same thing.
And most people don't stay in the same profession for 10 years anymore.
Yeah.
People change career paths. And there's no rush.
You're allowed to take your time.
You are. And probably unpopular advice, but if I could force everybody to work as a GP for a few years, I think that would also be very valuable.
it's actually very rewarding working as a GP, to be honest with you. But that's my personal.
No, I agree. I was also very happy working as a GP. I found it incredibly hard work. You really work very hard as a GP.
Yeah.
But it's wonderful to be able to build those relationships with the patients and
and
have continuity with your patients. No, but you learn so much as a GP because you're seeing everything or anything every day.
And I think you know, in our fourth year we had a bit of exposure working with GPs, and it was incredible to me how you literally in the matter of 5 minutes switch from orthopedics, you know, to back to your RESP and your pulmonary problems. And it's just like you're constantly like you're juggling and dealing with so many hats that you have to put up with all the time. So no, I have a lot of respect for GPs, actually. It's really honest work. So speaking broadly now, are there any short courses that you think that doctors should do during their internship in ComServe to make them more competent and prepared?
So I'm sure you know the ACLS, ATLS, PALS courses. Those are really great.
Okay.
I think they give you really good practical exposure.
Okay.
And prepare you for a lot of the stuff that you'll see in a smaller hospital.
Okay.
And then do you know if they still run the basic surgical skills course?
I'm not actually sure about that. So I think they might through Tux. I think they do.
Yeah, because I know Wits Circuit also has one, but I can highly recommend that.
Okay.
It's a 2 or 3 day course where they teach you how to tie sutures. You practice some bowel anastomoses on, I don't know if it was pig's intestines
probably,
or what.
They loved using the pigs.
but that was really, really good. Not just for the, so you're comfortable closing an abdomen, but just to teach you handiness with putting in sutures. Because even if you work as a casualty doctor, you have to stitch someone's face up. You want to be able to grasp your needle and your forceps without pricking yourself.
Yeah.
So that was a really good course that we went on as interns. And then if you've got an interest in a speciality, whether it's anesthesia or gynecology, in many hospitals in your comm service here, you can, if you prepare and you request it, you can sometimes get 6 months in that discipline.
Oh, wow.
And then you do your diploma. So you can do a PEDS diploma. You can do, I think, a neonatal diploma, gynae diploma, anesthesia diploma. There's a surgical diploma.
Jeez, it's quite extensive.
It is. And that the diplomas are great because there is a fair amount of studying, but it's also very practical. So you can get a good – you can boost your skill set there.
Okay.
And then when you come out of that time, it also gives you an idea. Is it something that you really want to do or not?
And does that – benefit you when they select you to become a registrar at all? Not really.
It's certainly not held against you.
Okay.
In anesthesia now, there's so many people doing a diploma that if you have a diploma, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're more likely to get a position.
Okay.
But
I guess it's helpful to you though at the end of the day.
It is. In my case, it was helpful. When I applied for a medical officer position at Steve Biko, then it wasn't a very popular hospital to get to apply at.
Oh, wow.
So most people were applying in Western Cape or Natal.
Of course they were.
Because everybody wants to go to the coast. So when I applied, I think I was the only one out of the 12 applications that had a diploma.
Okay.
So that worked in my favor, definitely.
Yeah. Okay. No, I think that's very interesting, and I think a lot of students are very unaware.
Maybe just something else for the students. Something I've picked up on is that a lot of students are worried that if they don't excel in medical school, they're not going to specialize.
Yes.
Is there that perception?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, so I can just reassure them that I don't think anybody ever looks at your marks again once you're done. Okay, it's not entirely true. So when you come for an interview, you get weight for certain things, so that they'll quickly review your medical school history as well. But it counts so little that it's almost not – doesn't count in a meaningful way.
That is definitely quite a relief. So what do they generally look for? Is it just more your personality that suits it or what –
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of questions in the interview.
Okay.
There might be some clinical questions, questions on how do you work with colleagues. And you have to present yourself.
Mm.
They also look at what research ideas you have. So that's quite important.
Okay.
If you arrive there either having done research or with a really good research idea, it counts heavily in your favor. And then if you've done your primaries.
Okay.
I think the primaries carry the biggest weight for most of the specializations. Yeah. I know in many places, I think UCT, they won't even consider you if you haven't done your primaries.
So how do you go about doing your primaries? Like, where do you even apply? Where do you start?
So the primaries are run through the College of Medicine of South Africa, and there's a primary exam every 6 months. So in anesthesia, I think you can write them really at any time you want to. Whether you're an MO or not. Possibly in some of the disciplines, you may have to get a reg post first, but I don't think that's the case anymore because we're getting more and more registrars that by the time they start their time, they've already done their primaries. And primaries it's usually three subjects, and it's basic sciences subjects. So for us, okay. It was physiology, pharmacology, and physics.
Wow, back to physics.
Yeah, but
you thought you let it go.
Yeah, also the physiology was enormous. I don't think I ever studied the physiology that in depth as a medical student.
I don't know if we always have time, but physiology really is the backbone, a huge backbone of medicine.
It's true. And especially in anesthesia, if you understand your physiology, you understand the pharmacology and you understand your pathophysiology.
Yes, that is very true. So I think that's another tip for all medical students. Take physiology very seriously. So we've spoken a bit about the primaries and how you go through the process of getting your primaries done. But once you've done your primaries, can you just take us through the process of specialization? Like, how does it go? How does it work as a registrar? What do you do? What's expected of you? And then, you know, how does the final specialization come about?
Okay, so in anesthesia, most of our guys are going to specialize. They first get a medical officer post.
Okay, yeah.
Because there's a shortage of registrar positions. And so then they're working in the Department of Anesthesia as a medical officer. They do exactly the same work as the registrars.
Okay.
But as soon as, and then they apply to enter the registrar program. Now, the registrar program, it's a 4-year program. You're employed as a contract worker during that time.
Okay.
So you've got a 4-year contract.
Okay.
And at the end of those 4 years, then your contract comes to an end, and you either get chucked out or you can apply for an extension.
Oh, wow. Quite intense.
Yeah. So you have to get your stuff done in those 4 years. Most people write their primaries within the first 2 years and then write their finals in their final 12 months.
Okay.
Depending on how their timing is, depending on if they write it earlier or later. Now, the registrar program, it's 4 years and it's a lot of work you have to get through.
All right.
It's a big advantage if you can arrive with your primaries, because then you've passed physics, pharmacology, and your physiology, and you can spend your first 2 years getting used to the environment that you're working in.
Okay.
And you're not having to have to study those primary subjects. Yeah. Unfortunately, I didn't have my primaries when I arrived.
Oh, okay.
But I did have 3.5 years experience of anesthesia.
So that obviously benefited.
So that was very helpful, just in terms of giving a basic anesthesia without having to worry about learning how to give an anesthetic.
Yeah.
I wrote my primaries within the first year of my reg time.
Okay.
And that was good because then I got that out of the way.
Mm.
And then I could start building on my specialist knowledge for writing my part two or final exams.
And are those the only, so do you have a set number of, intubations that you have to do? Is there anything like that?
No, it's not like that. So you write your primaries. Once you've passed your primaries, then the next thing you're eligible for is to enter your ICU rotation.
Okay.
And the ICU rotation is usually a 3-month rotation where you rotate through the medical ICU, the surgical ICU, and the Kelafong ICU, which is a mixed ICU. And once you're done with that, then you typically go on to the senior anesthetic call roster.
Okay.
So when you start with your anesthetic rotation, apart from your daily work, you've got your on-call hours as well.
Okay.
And you do anywhere between 4 to 6 calls a month at Steve Biko or 8 to 10 calls at Kelafong.
So you can kind of kiss your social life away.
If you want to specialize, you're not doing it for your social life.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
It really is a full-time commitment. Because you've got your long theater days.
Mm.
Once your theater day ends, you go see your pre-meds. Once you're done with your pre-meds, you get home, you Give your wife a kiss, you eat some dinner, and then
go study.
7 o'clock you go study. So typically 7 to 10 you'd study, then try to get to bed. Sometimes wake up early in the morning, study some more. Because your days are busy, you don't have much chance to study during the day. So once you've got your, you've got your after hour duties. Mm. After hour, we've got three registrars on call.
Okay.
So there's a first, second, and third. The first on call works in Theatre 7, which is our general emergency theatre. The second on call works in Theatre 6, which is our general orthopedic theatre. And then the third on call usually goes to the obstetrics theatre.
Okay.
So once you've done your ICU time, then when you come back to anesthesia, you typically slot into a first call.
Okay.
And the first call coordinates the call and does the sickest patients, because usually the sickest patients come to Theatre 7.
Okay,
that's
wow.
the laparotomies, the ectopic pregnancies, the neurosurgical patients. At Steve Beaker, it's actually anything. pediatrics.
Yeah, you get thrown at anything you get thrown your way.
Yeah. So, and then you write your final exams in your final 12 months. So you need about 18 months of preparation time for that.
Okay. And what is that? What do your examinations consist of?
So the examinations, they consist of a written component.
Mm-hmm.
That usually, the structure of that has changed in the last 2 or 3 years. So now your written, I think, is end of January, and the second written, I think, end of June, July.
Oh, okay.
And then you have this horrible waiting period of about 6 weeks where the writtens get marked. It's usually about 2-3 months after the written that you have an oral.
Okay.
So it's like an OSCE setup.
Okay.
And a patient side.
Oh, wow.
So we used to have to evaluate patients and examine them and then present. That no longer happens. And now you get case studies and you still have to present the case studies as a patient. So half of the examination is that, where you present two examiners, and the other half is in 8 OSCE stations where you go from examiner to examiner and you get asked specific questions.
Well, that's quite intense.
But the frustrating thing is, so you write, you have your written, and then you wait 6 to 8 weeks to hear if you passed. And usually by the time you hear if you pass, it's about 2 weeks before the oral. So you've got this period of uncertainty where you still have to study, but you don't know if you've passed. So it really is an exhausting process.
Shame, I can only imagine.
But then if you're lucky enough to pass, then you usually have a few months left in the department, and that's a nice time because you've passed, so you're essentially a consultant, but you're still in a registrar position, so you get given more responsibility.
Okay.
You get to do a lot of the more complicated lists by yourself without someone hovering over you.
Okay.
That's a good time to boost your experience before you either stay on in government as a consultant or you go into private.
Head off to private. So what does life look like after you have qualified? But as amazing as they say it is.
So, I think, that's a complicated question to answer. So it's certainly that there's a euphoria when you're done.
I can imagine.
I remember the day before we found out our results. I was driving in the car with my wife, and we were driving down Duncan Street in Hatfield.
Oh yes.
And we got a phone call from one of my friends who'd also written with me, and he said, the results are out.
Oh, gosh.
So I said, are you sure? Because they're only supposed to come out tomorrow. He's like, no, the results are out. I've checked. We've all passed. And we start screaming and shouting and behaving like wild people there.
I
driving
can only
Duncan.
Imagine.
And we get home, and I'm thinking, that's so weird that the results came out a day early. Let me just double check. And I went online, and I saw, nope, my friend had looked at the written results, not the oral results. So we still had to wait an entire day. Luckily, we all passed, otherwise.
At least.
Can you imagine but if he still, passed and we failed after he sold us with that dummy?
Sold your dreams there. Jeez, I can only imagine.
But once you're done, then I think life gets going again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the 4 years that you spend, you're studying, you're on call, so it really is a tough time. It takes a lot out of you. And once the euphoria of the exam passes, then I think a lot of people struggle with a time of depressed mood, depression.
Yeah.
Because you've had this thing that you're working towards for 4 years. You've had a clear goal, clear structure, and you've wanted to achieve this speciality post. And then you have it, and now you realize
all
the admin that you haven't been doing the last 4 years, you have to catch up now. All the relationships that you haven't been able to maintain, you're trying to maintain them again. So I think for most of us, it's an adjustment time afterwards.
Definitely. I can only imagine.
Because you have to get back into a normal life and you have to find a new goal and a new passion that you have to work towards. And I see it with colleagues who didn't have something else,
they only had this academic goal, I suppose.
It can be quite a difficult adjustment time. I mean, it's fantastic that you don't have to study in that manner. But you almost forget to function normally during that time.
Yeah, and you perhaps have to rediscover yourself after this process for some people.
Yeah, I think so. And also you've got 4 years of chronic sleep deprivation.
You've got a lot of catching up to do.
So I think on average people reach the burnout phase after about 18 to 24 months of their specialization time. So the last 2 years you would fulfill all the criteria for burnout. So you have to find a way afterwards then just to get into a healthy spot again.
And how do you manage dealing with that burnout? How did you manage with those hours?
So I think while you're in the program, you have the safety of the structure of the program. You know, the A, B, and C is expected of me. I need to be here at this time. And if you're someone who works well with that kind of structure, then the program carries you through. Once you're done, then it probably takes you about 6 months to realize just how burnt out you were, sure, or how sleep deprived you were. So it's a slow process. I think it's good to have some time to reevaluate where do you want to go, what do you want to do. I remember prior to my exam, you become a little bit psychotic because you're studying nonstop. I suppose it's like
took all the boxes for psychosis.
like medical school tests, except now you have a family as well, and you've got a mortgage.
Added pressure.
And you're a grown up now, so you've got all these grown up responsibilities and family that don't see you. So then you go a little bit. You get very intense, and I remember getting very angry one day at the system and saying the moment I'm done with my specialization, then that's it. I'm going to get out of this hospital. Mm-hmm. Government won't see me ever again. I think I used some expletives in that as well.
I don't blame you.
This is the last this hospital has seen of me.
Joke's on you. You're still there.
Here I am 4 years later. No, but once the exam was over and you catch up on your sleep and I had to go through, okay, what's important to me? What do I want? Where do I want to go next in my life? Then, it helped me to identify what was important again. Mm. I also had quite an unexpected, deep experience where I went to a congress in the Kruger Park.
Okay.
Not deep, profound experience, I should say. Mm-hmm. So we had an anesthetic congress in the Kruger Park.
What a wonderful place to have it.
Wonderful place. I agree. It was held at Skakuza, awesome restaurant.
Lovely.
There. Very nice conference center. And we went for game drives every morning, and runs in the afternoon. But on the first night, I got there the day before the congress started, and some of the congress organizers were there already, and they had a dinner at the restaurant that's there. And I ended up sitting next to a world famous cardiothoracic anesthetist.
Oh, wow.
That's a guy from the UK who then spent some time in Saudi Arabia working. And he's published numerous articles and been a speaker at many congresses. Mm-hmm. And I was expecting someone who's arrogant, because cardiothoracic anesthetists are.
When you'd
I won't say they're arrogant, but they're very.
They feel a bit superior.
Yeah, they're highly skilled people who are very good at what they do. And I was expecting someone was going to boast about his career. Mm-hmm. After a glass or two of wine, we started chatting. And it was this really humble guy. Mm. And instead of telling me all about his career, he spent the evening telling me about his regrets.
Oh, wow.
I know.
I hope you were taking notes.
it was very unexpected, but what he spoke to me about was how he wished he'd spent more time with his family when he was a specialist.
Wow, that is actually very profound, eh?
Because he explained to me how he'd work in the NHS, and then at the end of the day, he'd go work in private in the evening, and he would always use his justification was, well, I can make extra money, we can go on nice family holidays. But he said then by the time his kids were teenagers, they didn't know him, he didn't know them.
Sure.
I think they felt quite betrayed by that.
Yes, and I think that's actually quite sad. I think at the end of the day, sometimes what we forget is life is about relationship.
Yeah,
yeah.
No, that's so true. And he managed to patch things up with his family.
At least.
But it was at that time that I was deciding, should I stay on in government as a consultant? Should I go into private? And it helped to give me some perspective that, life's not just all about work.
Mm.
It certainly is a rewarding part of what we do. But that helped me then to consider staying on. And having stayed on in government, I've been very happy with my decision.
So we were actually talking about it earlier as well. So why government over private?
So I wouldn't say it's necessarily an all or nothing approach. So
okay.
I'm employed by the Department of Health as an anesthetic consultant at Steve Biko. But we have something called RWOPS, which is remunerative work outside of public service.
Okay.
What that stands for is that you can apply to do some extra work outside.
Okay.
So I'm still able to do some private work,
okay,
but it's limited private work. So I don't do private work during government office hours.
Okay.
So typically what I do is I'll occasionally be on call over a weekend for a surgical colleague and then do some work in private. The advantage of that is you can augment your income.
All right.
Because the salary that you have as a government consultant, it's a really decent salary,
but
our schooling in South Africa has become so expensive.
The
standard of living, that it's really helpful to be able to top up your income.
So,
and the other nice thing about working in private is it's a different system. Again, you see different kind of patients. At Steve Biko, most of the time I'm supervising, which is enjoyable, but it's also nice just to
get back in there to
do my job, as I train to do. But I decided to stay on in government because, something that really appeals to me is the hours.
Okay.
So in government, you work from 8 until 4 most days.
And I think that's almost, I mean, as a medical student, I wouldn't have known that. I would have thought in government you work so much harder, but it's nice. It's almost weird how we have it the other way around, that it's actually, I guess, because of the fact that when you are working in private, you essentially sometimes are working for yourself, so you have to make that money for yourself.
No, that's true. In government, you're salaried, whereas in private, you earn per case that you do. And when I was a GP, I got paid per case that I did, and it is a lot more stressful. It's stressful, but it's also very motivating. So it's that it's like the mouse that keeps drinking the sweet fluid that the scientist gives to him, and then he gets addicted to that and goes back for more of the sweet juice. When you're earning per patient, it can also be quite rewarding.
Yeah.
Psychologically, and you certainly push yourself very hard, but often to extremes.
Mm.
So in private, the working conditions are very nice. It's a well-functioning system. You've got, the hospitals you work at are enjoyable places to work at. There's functional coffee machines, and you get lunch and breakfast and dinner.
Yeah.
But in terms of hours, it's long hours. So
you
start early, you often work late, as the anesthetist, you work for the surgeon and for the patient, but you work as long as what the surgeon does. So if the surgeon has a list that runs late, then you're staying there late. So it does make it tricky then to see your family that regularly. Whereas in government, we've got a system where most days we finish between 4 and 5 with our lists, and then there's always someone on call.
Yeah.
So we do about 5 or 6 calls a month.
Okay.
But when you're not on call, you're off.
Okay.
And I think that's the biggest difference. So in private, you've got your patient that you do during the day, and then when you're done at the end of the day, you go home. But if the patient has a complication, an anesthetic complication, you are still going to be responsible. You're still going to go back to the hospital.
Yeah.
So I find it a little bit difficult to switch off that way.
Okay. No, definitely. Yes, I just want to say, you know, from our side at MedTalks and from all of the students, I'm sure, thank you so much. I think this was a bound full of knowledge and a great insight into the process of speciality. I think a lot of us, you know, we aren't aware of, you know, what to do or how to go about it. So it's really nice to have someone who's gone through this process just offer us some advice. So thank you so much for coming in today and for offering us your advice. We really appreciate it.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's been good to be here.
And then I just want to thank the listeners. Thank you guys so much once again. We really hope that you appreciated this as much as we did. Yes, please, if you guys have any questions, any queries, anything that you would like to know, send it through to us. And once again, give us a follow or a like on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And yes, that's it from us. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye-bye.